It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
We're not afraid here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona. And from Tucson, Arizona, I have Dr. Jane Orient. She is the executive director of AAPS, Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, which has been a voice for private physicians since 1943. Jane, I had no idea that AAPS has been around that long.
Oh, yes, it started back the first time they tried to socialize medicine in America with the Wagner-Murray-Dingle bill, the Dingle being the father of the one who's still there.
Really?
Yes.
And what was their attempt back then? Same kind of thing?
Same kind of thing, yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Well, you know what? I'm sorry?
Compulsory insurance.
Compulsory insurance. Isn't it just the way? Yeah. You know, we're gonna force people into third-party contracts. That's right. We talked. Let me tell the audience real quick. One of the things about involuntary servitude, which is the 13th Amendment, it's a slavery. Okay. One of the definitions is they were arguing for this in Congress is they said when you force people into third party contracts, like freed slaves had to get bonded to use the carry cotton with their own wagons on the public road kind of thing. They were just trying to keep the slaves down. You know, if you had assets over $500, you're a plantation owner. Well, okay, you had to work for him. You couldn't be your own boss deal. So they said, look, we can't have this involuntary servitude. And one of the definitions is that if you are compelled by government law to be forced into a third party contract, that's involuntary servitude. That's slavery. I mean, that's like bad. So now we have compulsory insurance. Well, we had here in Arizona in the mid 90s a case about compulsory insurance, mandatory auto insurance, using that argument. The government freaked out. So and you guys have a lawsuit now to stop Obamacare. Well, tell me about that. And did you check on that one aspect there?
Our attorney is looking into that aspect. The 13th Amendment cases have really not been applied to anything except for conscription for the Army, the draft. But this is a possibility that we're looking into.
Oh, it's good PR.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when that's when they argued it in the beginning, you know, forcing slaves into you know, wagon insurance. I mean, you know, and the difference is what? You know, we're just slaves, you know? Well, tell us about your lawsuit that you're doing now. Oh, before we do that, you guys were involved when Hillary tried to do this thing in the Clinton administration, was it 92 to 94, around in there sometime. That's when I first became aware of you guys. I thought you guys were created in opposition to that. I had no idea that this is, you know, a long-time lineage of government trying to do this and the insurance industry and so on. But, you know, tell us about what happened there.
We sued the Clinton task force because they were having secret meetings in violation of the Federal Advisory Committee Act, and Hillary Clinton was a private person who was on this commission, and that would require them to publish their minutes, to open the meeting to the public, and so on. So we sued them under that and got access to a whole bunch of their documents, and the same players were involved then as are involved now, folks like United Health and other big insurance companies and nonprofit organizations who think the world would be so much better if we did things their way. And since people aren't too cooperative sometimes, well, we'll make the government make them do things their way.
Well, how are they making us. I mean, you know, there it always comes down to government doesn't know anything other than compulsory, you gotta uniforms, badges, pieces of paper embossed with seals signed and guns. You know, I mean, that's how they get stuff done. But, you know, what is it that they're doing now?
Well, you will be forced to buy insurance, and they will define what constitutes insurance and what makes it, what constitutes affordability, or else you will be paying a, well, it's not a tax. No, it's not a tax. That would get, involve the taxing and spending power of the Constitution. But it's something else. It's a penalty. And at first it sounds like it might be sort of small, except that it would be like $700 or 1% of your income or eventually 2.5% of your income, whichever is greater. And then, of course, you don't get insurance in return for it. You just give them money. But if you buy the insurance, it will be very expensive, particularly if you are a lower-risk person. It will be much more expensive than you can get it for now, because you've got to help them insure all these other people.
You know, this is one thing that we learned in the research when we were doing the mandatory auto insurance thing, is that before they made it mandatory, auto insurance was cheaper. And the other thing is, a lot of people don't understand, is that when you bought uninsured motorist, you were protecting against somebody else that didn't have insurance. Because think about it. Insurance is to protect my assets. If I run over somebody, they could sue me and take everything that I got. Especially if you have assets, you go, I want to protect my assets. If I'm worried that my assets are going to be damaged because the person that hit me doesn't have insurance, that's why I get uninsured motorist. You know, I get insurance to cover me against people that don't have insurance. People that don't have it, they got a $200 clunker that's barely making it down the road and have no money. You know, they're like, hey man, you can't make me get insurance. I hit somebody, I'm responsible. Yeah, come try and get it. So this is, you know, freedoms is, you know, is a messy thing. So we're just going, look, you can't force people into this. If you feel you want to be protected against this, buy uninsured motorist. What was interesting is that the insurance, including uninsured motorist, to insure yourself against people that don't have insurance, you were paying less for auto insurance than when they made it mandatory for everybody, because it was mandatory. Well, now the same thing's going to happen. Healthcare is not going to go down. You want to have affordable healthcare? Well, deregulate healthcare. But heck no, that's not what's going to happen. So now they're going to have compulsory, you got to get it. Well, let's say that, okay, I can't afford it now. Now I'm going to be subsidized by the people that did pay for it somehow. And when does that happen? How do I get access to healthcare if I can't afford to buy it?
Well, we make somebody else buy it for you.
Well, who are these people? How do I go, I'm not, you know, I want, you know, my tummy hurts, I'm going to the hospital. Who's paying? When does that start? What's the criteria for me to be seeing the doctor? How does that work?
Well, right now, if you go to the hospital, they have to see you without asking about your insurance coverage to make sure that you don't have a life-threatening condition. This was the EMTALA Act, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, that kept the hospitals from doing a wallet biopsy and sending you to the county hospital if you came in demanding treatment that you had no intention of paying for.
Well, you know, let's get into a philosophical discussion here for a little bit. We have a lot of hospitals that are closing due to this very thing. You know, certainly when you have poor people in some areas, especially along the border and stuff like that, you have Hispanics that there's no other access, and they got the American law on their side. They walk in, give me treatment, okay? And you have people that if they could just go down to the local 7-Eleven and get some penicillin, you know, a week before, they never would have made it to the emergency room anyway. That's a whole nother issue. So this is where we have people going in, the demanding treatment law makes the hospitals provide. All of a sudden, the doctors become slaves to these people. They got to treat them. They don't get paid. And then they are big shocked that they close the hospital. And you go, okay, so we're going to try and keep them open and subsidize that. And I don't know how, but some people are going to be taxed to give free care to someone. And my question to you is, how do I get a special card? Am I expecting something in the mail? How am I signing up for this?
Well, these are all very good questions, because one of the things this so-called reform is supposed to do is to prevent people from going to the emergency room or prevent hospitals from going under, because everybody's going to have insurance. And you're supposed to get a card that you can take to a facility, and they will tell you then whether you are eligible to have treatment from a particular facility at a particular time, which of course means if you can be eligible, it means you can also be ineligible. So how this is supposed to bring about universal coverage is a good question, but then people don't read the bill. They just believe what the politicians tell them.
Well, we're looking at a much older generation coming that's going to, you know, the ailments for just age, you know, and our diet and how we live and our sedentary lifestyle. And I mean, there's going to be a lot of problems. And guess what's going to happen? The man is going to decide whether you're worth living or not. They're going to check how much money you got, how much you paid in, what value you are. I mean, I don't know what your political connections. I have no idea. I'm sure this happened in Soviet Russia before. Same kind of thing. When we get back, we'll see what Jane has to say about it. Are we to be concerned? I think so.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
It's amazing that you think about, you know, the Soviet, who's fallen, you know, who's going down? The European Union. What about Eastern Europe? I mean, the ones that didn't join the Union, are they better off? I don't know. But we need to understand what it was that brought them down. And it was all this collectivization of everything. And maybe did you think about when you were young, Jane, that maybe the Soviet Union, what was formerly the Soviet Union, would be freer than America?
Well, isn't that remarkable?
America, that's right. And China, communist China is, you know, it's topsy-turvy world. And what I want to get from you is, you know, just how topsy-turvy is it? I mean, I still, that's why I wanted to wait until after this legislation was law and call you and find out, I mean, how much about this law do we really know?
Well, if we'd read it, we'd know quite a bit, but most people haven't read it. But, you know, just to think about how topsy-turvy it is and how crazy it is might be another word. We say we spend too much on medical care. Therefore, we have another bill that will have us spend just a shade under $1 trillion more for medical care. How does that make sense? We spend too much, so we're going to spend even more.
And we're going to force it from you.
And we're going to force you to buy it. And this $1 trillion doesn't include the extra amount that people are going to be paying in their insurance premiums once they make this mandatory, and once they outlaw true insurance, under which you pay according to your risk level, just like with your car insurance. If you have a DUI, or you're a young male, or you've had accidents, you pay more for your insurance. But now with health insurance, they can't charge you according to your risk. So if you're young and healthy and you lead a good, clean, decent life, well, you have to pay more. So that it's not fair to enable you to benefit from that.
Well, I'm wondering how it is that they're... I tell you what it looks like. It looks like this is going to turn the health insurance companies into a government welfare program, and there's not going to be any new health insurance companies coming in. So they created the monopoly so that they don't have to compete with them with a government monopoly. The boys are at the top. They get their little parachutes. But anybody else, there is no competition anymore. And then anyone else that's not on the government-approved list or able to make do with this, they're just going to go out of business. They're just going to drive health care, whatever remnant there is left of it, they're going to force it to be all government.
Right. And these insurance companies are really going to do the government's dirty work, because they know as soon as they force everything into a third-party payment plan, the costs are going to go up. They always will. They always have. And so they're going to be tightening the screws to saying, you can't have this or you can't have that or you're not worthwhile, like you were saying. But these private companies are going to be the bad guys. The government will just delegate the, you know, the hard decisions to these companies.
Well, and that's one thing that, you know, somebody that has resources, you know, I'm uber rich? Am I allowed to go pay for my liver transplant and get my kidney from a poor India guy? I mean, you know, how's this working?
Well, that's not entirely clear. I mean, we really think that both doctors and patients need to declare independence from this system. But it's getting a little harder to do that under Medicare. Like right now, doctors can opt out. But the government doesn't really like to have doctors who are not under their thumb, who might do too much for these old folks who are costing them money and Social Security. So they are going to make it really difficult for doctors who are opted out to be able to order tests or procedures for their patients.
Wait, okay, now you're saying if they're under Medicare or even if they're not, or because, see, that's one thing that it's unclear to me what effect this had on senior citizens that retire. You automatically, you know, are enrolled in Medicare, right?
Yes, and there's nothing you can do about Medicare Part A. You can turn down Part B, but Part A, which is the hospitalization part, and this is part of our lawsuit also, if you try to turn down Part A, you have to give up all of your Social Security benefits, give back what you've already paid in. People don't really know that. In fact, they deny that it could possibly be true, but it is true. And you may ask, well, why would people want to get out of Part A? After all, there's no alternative to it for hospitalization insurance. And the reason is that if you're under Part A, you're subject to all of these rules that result in you getting kicked out of the hospital quicker and sicker, or that make it impossible for you to get the state-of-the-art procedures because nobody can be paid enough to make it worth their while to offer it to them. So they would like senior citizens to be trapped on this plantation and not be able to get out, even if they are willing and able to spend their own money.
Yeah, see, I've had friends and probably some people that you even know that are seniors. They hit their 70s, 80s. Their mind's there. Their body's starting to go down, and they are prevented from getting certain care. It's illegal for doctors to provide them certain care. And if they were to say, you know, this isn't working for me anymore. You know, I'm good. I'm just opting out. And they go, fine. For the past 20 years, every dime that you've ever paid in Social Security, show me the check.
Exactly. That's Medicare Part A, yes.
You know, this is, man, there's like people need to get their wrists smacked on this one. So I'm going, okay. So now let's say that I'm poor. Let's go for what this is all about. And we have, because we've heard this, whenever you get a number, and this one thing I repeat to the audience a lot. Whenever you hear the media, the press, politicians, the government start screaming about X amount of number or percentage of people are too much this or not enough that, you can count on here comes a government program or legislation to help them turn and change that number with a dial, and you're going to lose rights, you're going to lose money, it's going to get redistributed to somebody else. I guarantee it. You hear a number, and here it comes. And what do we always hear? X amounts of 10 millions of people are not have no health insurance, are not covered, oh my goodness, we to get them. And I know who they, the vast majority of them were. They were young people that didn't get sick.
Yes, but you see, they're not. Nobody is going to be given insurance. Nobody. Everybody's going to be forced to buy insurance. Now, if you meet their criteria, they will give somebody else's money to your insurance company to help cover your premiums. But you're not getting anything. You're going to be forced into this third-party plan, and it may be subsidized. But if you work hard and get more money, guess what? All your extra earnings are going to get sucked right out of your paycheck into the insurance company.
You know, this is one thing that's so insidious about this kind of stuff is that, you know, it's real basic, you know, and I'm not even sure who originally said it, but you subsidize something, you get more of it. You punish something, you get less of it.
Yes.
So what are you punishing? You're punishing productivity. You're punishing good health. You're punishing exercise and diet. And you're rewarding sloth and inactivity and poor health and bad eating habits and all. So guess what's going to happen? You know, this is such a neon flash. And I want to get on record here. Where are we? April 8th, 2010. You know, let me tell you what's going to happen. This type of legislation always produces the opposite effect of what they promise. You're going to reward bad health, and you're going to punish good health and productivity. So you're going to get more of what you said you were going less of. It's going to have the opposite effect. So I'm still looking at, so I guess you don't even know how a poor person, I'll give you an example. My parents, my father's in bad health. He's starting to fail in a lot of ways. He had post polio syndrome from when he was a kid. He had polio. He's starting to have problems with that. His back is going, needs pain medication, blah, 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 blah. And I remember us having a conversation. Oh, he goes, son, you need to support Obama because, you know, he's going to provide us health care and I need health care. It's all about the health care. And I'm like, Dad, okay. I mean, you know, I don't argue with my dad, but I, you know, he knows that I did not share his opinion. So now I'm going, okay, you got it, Dad. Now what? What do I tell him? I mean, you know, now what? What's he going
to
do?
Well, listen to Obama. He's saying, well, maybe it isn't worthwhile to treat you anymore. Maybe you should just get the pain pill. I mean, like the overdose of the pain pill is probably what he means. But, you know, the poor are going to be hurt worse by this than anything because the facilities dry up and go away because they can't make ends meet. There's going to be fewer facilities and the poor are going to be left out in the cold.
Well, you know, we're going to find out. We're going to find out probably pretty fast. This is, and they're going to need to fit. Well, obviously, we didn't get everything that we wanted. It was those damn Republicans' fault. We need to do some more socialized medicine. Well, we'll talk about more when we come back with Jane Orient in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
We just got to break free from, I tell you what, the biggest thing is just, you know, untruth telling, you know, and how much in lies did you experience during your time with your lawsuit on the Clinton effort to do this? I mean, well, I mean, that had to have an impact.
Oh, it was just lies from start to finish. And, you know, you expose one lie, well, then they cover it up with another one, and it's, and holding them responsible for perjury, which we tried to do with Ira Magaziner, turns out to be virtually impossible. I mean, they changed the definition of the words to mean whatever they want them to mean, just like everybody's calling this health care reform, when what it is compulsory insurance.
What was the end result of your lawsuit during the Clinton years?
Well, we think it helped to defeat Clinton Care because once people got curious about why those meetings were a secret, they looked at what was going on there, and they decided that they didn't really want this concoction that Clinton was coming up with. And eventually it got dismissed for being moot because we got everything out of them that we could have gotten out of them from the lawsuit. They had to turn over all their documents. But they made their documents very boring, and, yeah, they sent us a lot of blank floppy disks, and so it's just really, really hard to fight against the government because
the
their
game.
Resources are bottomless.
Just the game. And then we had Republican Romney in Massachusetts pass his health care. How similar is that to what we're dealing with now?
Well, Obama claims that it's very similar, and I think Obama's right on that particular point. We were opposed to the Massachusetts plan to begin with because it is mandatory insurance. It defines insurance. It outlaws a lot of things that are true insurance that enable lower-income people to have a product that they can afford that still protects them against catastrophes. We were against that, and Massachusetts is already having the problems that Obamacare is going to have. It's breaking the budget, and it's decreasing people's access to care because everything is clogged up with people trying to get their preventive care that they're now entitled to. And it's been a royal mess. It's destroying medicine. It's destroying the doctor-patient relationship. And it's killing the budget besides.
What do we really want? I mean, being someone such as yourself, a libertarian-oriented individual that's in the medical profession, I mean, what would be your alternative? We should have what?
Well, we ought to get the government out of medical care. There's no constitutional authority for them to be in it. They have no medical skills. All they have is the ability to extract money from people and threaten them with prison if they don't comply. And this is something to remember about the government. Do you really want to be dependent on such an entity for your medical care or for your livelihood? Remember, they don't have any money, and they do have the power to make your life very miserable.
And they don't have any incentive for you to keep living if you're old and not giving them tax money. You're
draining them. That's
right. So they're like, I don't know, you're looking kind of peaked to me, boy. We're going to send you to a special camp. You need to get on this cattle car. And we laugh, and we laugh until we're not laughing anymore. And I'm worried.
I am too, and you'll be looked at as an extremist if you suggest things like that. But just go visit a hospital and see how aggressive they are about getting people to sign these advanced directives. And they're not really about not putting you on a respirator and tubes and so on. They're really about withdrawing food and water, which is fatal no matter what kind of shape you're in to start with.
Okay, explain that to me. I go into a hospital, they go, sign here, sign here, sign here, and one of those things says what?
Well, they're advanced directives, and yeah, they do enable you to turn down overly aggressive medical care, but they're also incorporating into there things that you turn down life support, meaning food and water, which is really life support for everybody, no matter what their state of health. And they're pretending like that's the same sort of thing as just saying, well, I don't want an operation, or I don't want to be on a ventilator.
Well, this is the one thing we need to get down to the nitty-gritty here, and we'll take some of the hard positions on this and take some of the hard questions, because this we went through things like the Shrivo case, and we went through a lot of things like we have doctors making decisions for us, or do we get to make decisions for us? Do we get the selected doctor that can make a decision? Can we delegate that authority? Do we have living wills? It goes on and on and on and on and on. And the biggest arguments are always for the individual to have more power over their own life. And this entire bill goes totally the other direction. You've given up all power for the promise that they're going to take care of you, and there's no incentive for them to do that. It's just an excuse for them to create a new bucket of money, and all the R's and D's are arguing over is where the plumbing of the money goes to.
Well, that's true, and there will be people, all of these new bureaucracies set up in Washington to decide what is worthwhile and what isn't, and that really means who is worthwhile and what isn't. They're going to reduce disparities in healthcare, which means it has to mean taking medical care away from people who are already getting it. How else can you reduce a disparity?
Okay, let's go ahead and talk about, let's go hardcore. You know, I do this hardcore libertarian thing. Here we go. If I want to have, a 16-year-old do brain surgery on me and pay him in chickens, should I have the freedom to do that?
Well, I guess a hardcore libertarian would say, sure.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, I got a law that says no, you can't. Well, I'm going, okay, whose life is this? What am I allowed to be stupid? The second you start having government going up and saying, you can only get health care from someone the government says can provide it, well, then how far a step is it for them to tell what kind of health care and how much and with what drugs or what instruments or in what way? And so, I see this. I am of the opinion, and I'm sure history would point to gazillions of examples, we have access to much better health care the less government is involved. And if you get no government involved, then you have such a wide option of, I want to go to the witch doctor. It makes me feel better. Well, you care.
What's happening, they pretend to be protecting you from the witch doctor, but actually they're going to be driving you to the witch doctor or to the 16-year-old with minimal brain surgery skills by their policy. If they're driving competent people out of the profession, making it impossible for them to collect enough money to pay them to go through the training, what are you going to be left with? You're going to be left with a much diminished level of competence.
Yeah, that works for the government doctor. I'm right here. The scene that comes into my head is the guy that was replacing the eyes of Tom Cruise in Minority Report. It's like, come over here, man. I got antibiotics. Don't worry about it. I'm going to wash my hands. This is, I'm pretty certain that, I know it's going to happen. I'm just wondering how fast are we going to regret having allowed this to pass. And I'm not even sure we even had a role. It was, you know, it was baked into the cake even before Obama got elected. Because we had, you know, everybody was counting on Scott Brown from Massachusetts replacing Ted Kennedy. Oh, he's going to be the one that's going to save us. Oh, we're not going to have socialized medicine. Within 24 hours after him getting elected, he goes, yeah, we're after the campaign mode now. We can talk about universal health coverage. And I'm like, seriously? So it seems like this is already done. I don't know what the escape is other than people such as your organization filing lawsuit on this. What are you asking for? If you win, what happens?
We're asking for them to enjoin the government from enforcing the mandate because they have to have that mandate or there's no way they can fund this program. That is the key to the program.
And what is the state's role in this? How is it that, because we have a lot of states, especially Republicans, are posturing, oh, yeah, we got authority from our legislature. We're going to sue you. You know, and I don't know how serious they are about it, but, you know, they're going through the process. What is it that they're requiring from the state that they can opt out of?
Well, the states are suing, and I don't know how far they're going to get, but one thing is the unfunded mandates that they're inflicting on the states. To expand Medicaid coverage or to prevent them from cutting back on Medicaid eligibility lest they lose all of their federal funding. And I don't know what's going to happen there. Most of the states are probably going to capitulate already in order to get the federal money.
Well, they learned their lesson from the Brady Bill with Sheriff Mack when it was a Second Amendment Brady Bill. They were forcing sheriffs to spend money on doing these background checks and so on, and that's what he won on going. We just had him on earlier in the week, and he won his case on based on that very fact right there. You have a federal mandate that I do something that's costing me money, and you're not funding it. So what's the lesson that they learned? They go, okay, well, we got a mandate here. It says, all right, well, you can do this or not do this, but if you don't do it, guess what happens? You don't get your highway money. You don't get this money. You don't get that money. And we say, okay, well, we want the money, so they do it. But the yes. thing is they took it from us to begin with.
Exactly.
Stop giving them the money. Well, you know, that may be what happens. We got half of the American populace don't pay taxes right now. That was on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix right now. Half of you, you know, are net not paying. Okay, that's one place to start. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Oh, yeah. Yes, my head.
I mean, this is, what's the benefit of all this? If I could just, you know, only reach you, make you smile a little bit and give you some hope because there's somebody out there like Jane Orient and AAPS challenging this stuff. If it wasn't for you guys, who would be challenging? Is anybody?
No medical societies. I think the AMA must have made some sort of sweet deal with them because the AMA is already trying to help physicians figure out how to live with this and how wonderful it is.
Yeah, I broker a deal. You know, this is how do you guys keep insulated from this? I mean, what makes up your board? How is it that you guys are, you know, been around since the 40s and you're holding off the man? What's up with that?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with our means of support is from member dues almost exclusively. We do not have business arrangements that have lucrative deals with the government to produce codes, like to sell the government rope to hang us with.
Mm.
So if we don't represent our members, they just wouldn't be with us anymore.
Well, I'm glad you're there. You know, my only concern is that, you know, we're not advocating for something that doesn't make the principle clear. Because, you know, if you're going up and you're making the argument, you shouldn't make us do something this way, or you shouldn't be have the power to do this thing. You should have the power to do it a different way. And you're not really educating the people or arguing a principle, saying, you know, you shouldn't be doing this at all. It doesn't. And I'm glad you made the statement that you know, the authorization. If you're going to be going by this Constitution thing, well, where do you get the power to do this? Well, it's because we can. So we are. And if you say we can't, well, we got these nine guys in black robes that we pay tax money that we appointed that will determine whether we can or not. You know, so as you have this challenge going on, is there any hope that there's a part in this? Have you made motions to try and get them to hold it off while it's being adjudicated?
Well, we have asked the court to enjoin them against enforcing the mandate. I think we are also trying to persuade physicians and patients both to opt out of this third-party payment system. Physicians should be working for their patients. They should not be signing contracts with UnitedHealth and all these other managed care companies that put them in a conflict of interest situation with their patients. And patients should be looking at the economics of the situation. It is much less expensive to buy medical care directly than to put all of your money through an expensive check-writing service that pays for the equivalent of oil changes and windshield wiper blades. I mean, most medical treatment should be paid for out of pocket at the time of service. That way it's absolutely clear who the doctor's working for. He's working for the patient, not for the insurance bureaucrat. And it also cuts out a huge amount of overhead expense. Doctors who have gotten out of this third-party merry-go-round, including out of Medicare, find that their overhead drops by a third to a half or even more.
You know, around the country, certainly here in Arizona, we have a thing, now they call it immediate care or emergicare or whatever care. It's a clinic that's just sitting there and you walk in. You know, my wife accidentally cut her arm and we had to go in and, you know, boom. You know, I think it was $60, $70, gave her a shot, sewed it up. You know, it's all good. Boom. We're back to doing what we were doing, you know, within an hour and a half. And it cost us, you know, a fraction of what it would have been had we gone to the hospital or another doctor or certainly gone through insurance. And I'm going, all right, so what kind of impact is this going to have on a facility like that?
I don't know. I think that we need to keep facilities like that around. You need to patronize those facilities. We need to help them fight against any legal challenges to their existence, because that is the way medicine should be practiced. That's the way it happens in a free market. It's efficient. It's inexpensive.
Yes. No. And I get way better care. We really started using them for a lot of little stuff, you know, because you go and you sit into, we got to the point to where we had four kids. I mean, you know, there's always something, you know, motorcycle wrecks and this and stepping through and went glass and oh my goodness. So it got to the point to where every time we would go, you'd sit for hours in a waiting room and who's bleeding more?
You know, right.
They put them in, you wait for, we finally would go to other hospitals. So then we got into the habit that we would call and ask for wait times at different hospitals. Then we found out that they'd lie to you to get you to come there. Then we're going, you know, I'm so, healthcare has been so bad, and it's not because of not enough government, it's because of too much. Get them out. And people go, well, you anarchist? And I'm going, compared to what? What we got now? I mean, my hand goes way up for anarchy. You know, it can't possibly be any, oh yeah, it can. No, it can't. Because then I get to choose, and other people have the freedom to offer their services to me. And I determine, I decide. You know, the internet has been the best thing ever happened to humanity, in the fact that I can just go find, heck, I can go get my health care on Craigslist. You know, so I really see this as a future, and we could get to the point where you have things like, you know, health barges 13 miles out in the ocean where there are no regulation. You go out there and do it. Heck, it's called India. So this is already starting to happen, and this is going to force people into more. It's going to be cheaper for me to fly onto a platform out in the middle of the ocean off the coast of Southern California and get whatever health care that I want, including the airfare, at a fraction of what it's going to cost for my free health care from the government. So,
yes.
I mean, do you see that not happening?
Medical tourism is thriving.
I'm sorry?
Medical tourism is thriving.
Tell me a little bit about that. What's your experience with that?
I don't have any personal experience, but I do know that there are hospitals in India, Bangladesh, Thailand, where you get five-star accommodations. You get Western-trained surgeons at a fraction of the cost for getting the service done here. So we're shipping our medical industry offshore, too. I mean, this is really crazy.
No, this is I know people that have done this. They have had hip replacements, heart surgery. You know, to get heart surgery, a quadruple bypass, under $20,000, including the stay, the foot massages, and your own little personal, you know, assistant. You know, I mean, just stupid stuff, stupid reduction in cost. It's just amazing. And a lot of times, these doctors, they speak English. A lot of times when you go to Mexico, they are American doctors.
Well, actually, you may be more likely to get an English-speaking doctor in India than in an American hospital if things keep going the way they are.
Yep. And in what? And we're supposed to what? I mean, are we going to start advocating? Certainly, as you know, freedom fighting oriented individuals, I've had people on the show before. That's exactly what they're selling. Here in Arizona, they have a service. You pay it's not even really insurance. It's like a club that you belong to in one of the resorts at Rocky Point on the ocean there in the Gulf of California. And you go in there and you say, hey, you know, I'm here for my whatever. And you pay a reduced rate. You get to stay in your timeshare condo kind of thing. It's all good. And then you come back. And I know it's going to have to happen. They're going to try and make such trips illegal. They're going to be checking. You got any fresh scars on you at the border when you come back? And you think I'm kidding. I'm not.
Well, look into Surgery Center of Oklahoma. That's Surgery Center OK. We've got an ambulatory surgery center in Oklahoma City that's third-party free. The prices are amazing. 20% of what you'd pay at a hospital, don't have to go to Mexico. It is available here. There are places that are trying to shut folks like that down, but we need to stop them. We need to restore freedom to the United States of America.
Give me the name of that service. What was the name of it?
SurgeryCenterOK.com.
Surgery Center OK, so as in Oklahoma.
Right.
Okay.
They did have this radical idea of posting prices, so that you can find out what it's going to cost you.
The Surgery Center of Oklahoma is a 32,000 square foot state-of-the-art multi-specialty facility in Oklahoma City, owned and operated by approximately 40 of the top surgeons and anesthesiologists in central Oklahoma. The facility has been accredited by the AAHC, whatever that means, since 1998, without interruption, has annually provided care to thousands of patients. Blah, 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 blah. So here you have, and they got, you know, surgery and ophthalmology and foot and ankle and reconstructed and orthopedics and ear, nose, and throat. And this is, you know, it reminds me of a gentleman, a doctor that I know we both know, Dr. Richard Fisher. He was a doctor in Canada, and he and his physician wife moved to America because of socialized medicine there. He's in Sun City providing services to retirees up there. It got so bad that he said, "Nah, I'm done. I'm going into plastic surgery. I'm going into reconstructive cosmetic surgery because I don't have to deal with these regulations," and they lost a good doctor.
That is happening all over the country.
Of course, what kind of quality of the best doctors are the one that's like, yeah, no, I can do more and better, and I'm going over here. In fact, he left Canada for this very reason. So now we're in a situation, here it comes again, where are these doctors going to go, and what's going to be left? I don't know.
We're going to be willing to be slaves to the government.
Slaves to the government. Yeah, we're all slaves to the government. And, you know, and it's not even the government. It's just whoever controls the guns of government. Because you know what? I bet you they got plumbing in that bucket of money in health care. It's going to their pocket. Because that's what it's all about. Getting my money. And I'm going to get it from who? I'm going to get it from you. And somebody else. And somebody else. And I'm going to benefit from it. And there's nothing you can do about it. Except we got AAPS, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, out there doing the battle. Check them out. Check them out. Give out the webpage real quick.
AAPSonline.org.
AAPSonline.org. Jane Orient, thank you very much. We'll see you tomorrow.